In June 1981, eight IRA prisoners escaped from Crumlin Road Jail. In this Guhana Octoheim podcast, Joe Doherty, one of the escapees, talks through the escape, on the impact it had on him personally, and on the much-needed lift it gave to the prisoners in the H-blocks of Long Kesh, some of whom were on hunger strike at that time.
Well, first of all, I was arrested in May of 1980 after a shootout with the SAS. It was four of us caught on the operation. We went into the prison. As soon as you go into the prison, like all the prisons I've been into, Long Kesh, H Blocks, you always form escape committee. So we had all these ideas about making ropes, going over the wall, watching for a watchtower, so your intelligence is always out. Tunnels within Crumlin Road was totally useless, because where do you put the dirt? And things they got there. Then it was actually Robert Campbell, Fat Campbell. He was arrested with me, captured me, and he says, I think I'm going to be planning something where we're going to go out the front door. And we all thought it was a bit crazy. You know, we're always thinking, go over the wall, under the wall, through the wall, with explosives. But he says, no, it's where the least going to expect it. So over the next couple of months, we built up our intelligence. So every time we went down to what's known as administration block, this is to see the barristers and the solicitors. We were looking around for silent alarms, how many screws, these are the guards, many guards was on, what guards was on this, was there any other activity on that block? So after a while, we got a notion that we knew what we were going to do. So each of us at different meetings walking around the A-Wing saying, well, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. So it came in June of 1981. The hunger strikes were on. I was there when the word came about Bobby Sands. I knew Bobby, and I worked with Bobby when I was in Long Kesh in the prison camp when we were in the 1970s. That was a bit heart aching. But we were told at that particular time not to go on the escape. We had the escape plan, send it out to Belfast Brigade. They said, hold off, because we thought maybe it was an escape or whatever they got there that would put off the very sensitive negotiations, as you know, was going on with hunger strike. But once the fourth hunger striker died, I think it was Patsy O'Hara, then we got the word to go in. So we planned it for the Wednesday week. So we had everything lined up, word went outside, where to leave the cars, getting everything ready. My particular duty was to bring one of the guns down. So I had a cell partner called John Ferry, who's actually passed away. So he was saying the rosary and everything because he seen me putting the weapon together. I had to strip the weapon, put it in my boot. So that's me walking down towards the visits. It was in the canteen. And it says, Doherty, Campbell, McKee, Fusco, McGee, all the names called out of the ones who were going to escape. We would go down in the administration block to see them. And once we get down there, myself and Jerry Sloan were put in the cell. And the other two were sent in to see the barristers and the lawyers. So that's me new. So I took the gun out, got it ready, gave it to Jerry. Dingus McGee was coming out. So I shouted out to Dingus, well, what kind of a day is it out there? Does it look good? And that was a code word, because if it hadn't, if it, no, it's going to rain, that means call it off. There's too many Brits at the front, which there was. He said, no, it's going to be a sunny day. So once the door opened, I grabbed the PO, he's like the principal officer, I pulled him in. Jerry stuck the gun to him, says, you're on the arrest, Irish Republican Army, we're taking the block. So I immediately stripped him. Well, didn't take him down naked. I took off his tunic and stuff, and his hat and his badges and things he got there, and he had a whistle, and I put on the uniform and the hat. So once that happened, we tied him up, put him down. So then we started taking over the blocks. Everybody started making moves. So once we had most of the screws and one of the cells, these were the cells, and then we had the riders there, because there was other people in for other things, riders couldn't, we had to get them quieting down under one wing, and then the visits went late in B wing. So everything that we thought was going to go planned, everything down to precision was delayed by about 5 minutes, because the visits went late, these for people in B wing. So I had to get all these wee women into the cells, they were looking at cups of tea and hard dough, you ain't going to be late, I have to put my husband's supper on, who do you think you're doing, all this. So we had calm down miss, and it's at that particular time the phone went, and it was like one of the things you see in the cartoon in Tom and Jerry, the phone kind of shaking, and we all looked at it, and I looked at the phone, and I said, what do I do? Obviously that was somebody up the stairs, phoning down to say, what's keeping you, you know, because the new shift was coming on, so they're probably wondering where these guys were. So that's when I said, we'll lift the phone, and that's when Robert Campbell, the commander, says, no, go, Joe. So myself and a guy called Pete Ryan, who was later executed by the SAS, me and him walked out of the administration block heading towards the gates, and we had another guy called Tony Sloan. He was dressed as a barrister. So he had a Queen's University scarf on and glasses and a briefcase and looking very studious. So us three walked out. We were to escort him out. So we got to the first of the front gates, these are three gates. So the screw was on the other side, so we couldn't push open the door. He had to open it from the inside. So they were asking, he was asking me for the password, so I turned around and I said, look, this man's wife is in the Mater Hospital. She's having a cesarean. We need to get him out right away. And he was going, well, we need that. I mean, look, you know, just down the hall, because the Mater Hospital was just a couple of feet from the thing. We need to get him out. And he made the mistake of opening the lock. Once I heard a click, then I pushed the smaller gate. Once we got that through, us three were in, and then the other five came, and they were running behind a skip. So they ran across the main courtyard. I was very, very nervous because the new ship was coming on, so it was about 20 screws all standing around, milling around, smoking cigarettes and, you know, checking their watches. You know, and I'm looking at them, they're looking at me, and I'm on, oh, they have to know who I am, but they didn't. They were just kind of nodding over. They thought we were screws from the Hates Blocks or from McGilligan, where we knew screws in or something. Once we get through, and that's when all the alarms went, we get into what's known as the airlock. That's between the two big gates. An airlock, you can't get in one without the other. So we ran over there. Pete Ryan went into what's known as a pillbox. That's where the British Army was with the rifles. So he thought it was only going to be two army in there, but it was obviously six. So he wasn't expecting that. So he came back, because we were going to jump there and take the rifles. So next thing you know, we had to go. So Fat said, get the door open. So I got the second door open. And this wee screw, God love him, like, I mean, I was 25, he was elderly, so he's probably in his 40s when you think of it. But he wouldn't let go with that key. And I said, you have to give me that key. So I had to punch him in the nose and kick him, sort of thing. He didn't want to do that, but at the end of the day, we need to get out and you're worried about your job. So once we got that gate, then we went to the very last gate. And again, another screw was standing there, and he was reluctant to give his key over until he was kind of persuaded. He was talked into punching the nose. So he went down, and next thing I know, you get out on the Crumlin Road, and you're locked up for 14 months, and everything's grey. All of a sudden, you're out to this blue sky. There was red buses and blue vans and post office van, all the colour of the day. And I remember this bus just driving by, so I ran up the Crumlin Road, me and Pete and Tony, and dressed as the barrister. He dropped his briefcase. So we get up, we're all running up, and that's, of course, across the street is the High Court, Crumlin Road High Court. So there's a couple of army chiefs and police chiefs there, so they see us, but they don't understand. All they see is us running. They're thinking I'm being chased by these thugs behind me, because me and Pete Ryan's dressed as screws with uniforms and tunics and stuff. So we got across the street and we jumped over a small wall. This is the lower shankle. Once we get into there, you know, that's when the gunfire started. So we couldn't get into the cars. I couldn't get into the car. So we were at the front of the car and they were at the back of the car, like the boot of the car, and they were firing through the windows and a couple of our lads were firing back or something. So that's when I realised, I don't know why I did it, but I jumped up and says, what are you shooting at? I'm a policeman. So seeing some of the cops shooting at me going, they stopped and they're looking and says, Sarge, what's going on? Because it was all within like 4 seconds, all this gunfire, and they were confused as we were. So once he put his gun down, then I ran, and I just ran through the lower shingle. And the faster I ran, I seen a bar. You call it the Malvern Bar. It's a famous UVF bar, loyalist bar. So I went in there and took my tunic off, seen them all drinking beer and took the tunic off. So I'm running through the streets and I hear two footsteps behind me running. So I thought, this is the cops get me. And so I fell on this mound, bit of a green mound. Fell there, kind of just was giving up because the helicopters was up, you hear the jeeps everywhere. And I thought they were, but it wasn't, it was Becky McKay and Angelo. And they were saying, why are you running so fast? I mean, I thought you were cops. And we thought you were, and said, right, never mind. So it was like an archangel or an angel of mercy. This girl came out of the house with blonde hair, lovely blonde hair, with her car keys, and that got us the extra adrenaline to get up. So we went over, only Angelo, rather than saying Ulster Volunteer Force or UDA, we're taking the car, he said Irish Republican Army, we're taking the car. So she wouldn't let them go with them keys. She was kicking me, and I grabbed the keys and they got into the car. It's only two doors, so they're locking me out, all the crowd was coming out and trying to drag me away. So I finally got into the car. Then I got we got onto the Shankill, and we seen all the Jeeps everywhere. We drove down to Divis Street. We jumped out of the car, and there was a black taxi there. So they jumped in the front with a driver, Irish Republican Army. We're taking the taxi, just keep driving up. We've just escaped. So when I get in the back of the taxi, there was three elderly women sitting there with her shopping. So I'm sitting and I'm and they're saying, calm down, son, calm down. You need to get home to your mommy. I says, no, I says, I've just escaped. Yes, sure. They thought it was a glue sniffer. They thought it was down stealing clothes in the shop or stealing jewelry or snatching somebody's purse or something. I said, no, I'm serious. I says, we escaped, and they're going and they're putting their messages away onto them and protecting. So I thought I was going to mug them. So when I got out of the taxi, I said, well, what's the 6 o'clock news? And they went, yes, son, you go home to your mama. Your mommy's worried about you. You shouldn't be doing all them drugs like that. So we got away into the house, and one of the commanding officers, the Belfast Brigade, came and he said, what happened? I said, I think Dingus is dead, Fat's dead, Pete Ryan's dead. I don't know what happened to Biggie McKee, I think. And about an hour later, he come back in and he says, all eight's out. I always get emotional about that, because you're worried about all that work and you thought, well, there's three lads, they're probably lying in the middle of the Shankill dead because there's so much gunfire. And then when he says, no, all eight's out, and was great. So he went away, put me in a safe house. The woman made me a steak. She said, a steak and onions, remember that? And a black Russian for some reason, I don't know. I don't drink vodka. So I was drinking that, watching the TV, and Judge Hutton, who's the chief judge now, a very senior judge now, he sentenced us in what they call absentia. So we had a chair with our names on it, and the governor stand behind the chair and said, you do that, any life sentence with 30 years, might recommend it. So the sentencing process went on, even though we heard he jumped onto the desk, because he knew. He says, there's an escape from the jail. He says, find out who they are. He knew it was us. So that was gratifying. And then maybe across the border, just before we crossed the border and go back to the hunger strikes, was Joe McDonald. We heard that Joe McDonald was very seriously ill and was comatose, semi-comatose. And his wife or somebody whispered in his ear that eight lads have escaped from the Crumlin Road. And he just actually, first time in days, he actually sat up and put up, you know, the victory sign. So you think of everything. It wasn't just about getting us out personally, you know, although I was 24 years of age, already had 6 years, 7 years in before in a sentence. I'm going to spend the rest of my life in jail. So it was gratifying that you can get yourself out, but it was to show them that we weren't beat. Lads were down the hunger strike, but the Irish Republican Army prisoners, political prisoners, were maintaining their discipline and their ingenuity and their smartness to get that escape. And the other time was that affected me. I was on the run across the smuggled us across the border, and I was going from Sligo. I had false ID and my hair all turned brown and everything on the run. And I remember there was a newspaper clipping. A newspaper, the Irish Independent. I seen Martin Herson. Now I knew Martin Herson. I used to teach him Irish. He was in with me at one time before he went down to the Hayes Blocks and on the blanket, and he, big soft fella. I used to hit him in the head. We stopped looking out at the seagulls. You're here to learn Irish and Irish history, because I had to motivate them, because they were on the way down to the blanket protest, and I never thought this guy would stick the beatings, lying naked in the cell. And then when I heard his name going on the hunger strike, I thought, well, he'd be okay, because everybody thought the last hunger strike was the last hunger striker. Everybody thought when Bobby Sands died, well, that would be it. And then I've seen, you know, one after another. So with Joe McDonald dying, I would say, well, I think Martin's got another 40 to 50 days. But he died real early. So when I seen this photograph, I thought maybe he's come off a hunger strike and he died. And I started crying. And these two women come over and said, "What's up?" I said, "No, my mummy's very ill. She's having cancer and stuff." So the whole way up to Bon Doran, they were consoling me because it was emotional. You know, that you're out and you're free. And there's a young man like that. I went down the throne to see his grave and stuff. And, you know, up to Bobby's and stuff like that there. Because I knew them two personally. You know, I met them, play guitar and stuff with Bobby. And then young Martin, like, trying to, like, get him to grow up and be a man and get your start reading. You know, instead of reading comics, read these James Connolly book or something, trying to get him motivated into politics because he was so young and innocent. And when I seen this photograph, I was just heartbroken. So the escape was important because they didn't have a radio or TV in there, so naturally somebody would hear from somebody. Eight lads have escaped from the Crumlin Road. So my mates, they're on the blanket, who were it? Joe Dachman. They're all going, "Oh, Joe Dach, he's away. So they were all waiting to me coming down because we were on our way down the next day to go on to the blanket protest because our trial was over and we were to go down on Friday and we escaped on Wednesday. So we were there, we were to get sentenced and then go straight down, go on the blanket protest during the hunger strike. So that was one of the things. So all my mates were waiting to me, you know, Paul Baker and all, but wait till Joe comes down, he'll be down, and the next thing you know, Joe's not coming, he's gone, he's way out.